to get me over being worked up about all of this. 19. And wouldn't you know, something big was arranged. The Colonial Union showed up. The shuttle landed, and a little green man popped out. And I thought, this seems familiar. It was even the same little green man, General Rybicki. But there were differences. The first time I saw General Rybicki, he was in my front yard, and it was just him and me. This time, his shuttle landed in the grassy area right in front of Croatoan's gate, and a large chunk of the colony had turned out to see him land. He was our first visitor since we came to Roanoke, and his appearance seemed to give the idea that maybe we would finally be out of exile. General Rybicki stood in front of the shuttle and looked at the people in front of him. He waved. They cheered wildly. This went on for several minutes. It's like people had never seen someone wave before. Finally, the general spoke. "Colonists of Roanoke," he said, "I bring you good news. Your days of hiding are over." This was interrupted by another gout of cheering. When it calmed down, the general continued. "As I speak to you, my ship above is installing your communication satellite. Soon you will be able to send messages to friends and loved ones back on your home planets. And from here on out, all the electronic and communication equipment you had been ordered to stop using will be returned to you." This got a huge whoop from the teenage sectors of the crowd. "We know that we have asked much from you," Rybicki said. "I am here to tell you that your sacrifice has not been wasted. We believe that very soon now, the enemy that has threatened you will be contained, and not just contained, but defeated. We couldn't have done this without you. So for all of the Colonial Union, I thank you." More cheering and nonsense. The general seemed to be enjoying his moment in the sun. "Now I must speak with your colony leaders to discuss how to reintegrate you into the Colonial Union. Some of this may take some time, so I ask you to be a little patient. But until then, let me just say this. Welcome back to civilization." Now the crowd really went nuts. I rolled my eyes and looked down at Babar, who went with me to the landing. "This is what happens when you spend a year out in the wilderness," I said. "Any dumb thing looks like entertainment." Babar looked up at me and lolled his tongue out. I could tell he agreed with me. "Come on, then," I said. And we walked through the crowd to the general, who I was supposed to escort back to my dad. General Rybicki saw Babar before he saw me. "Hey," he said, and bent down for his slobbering, which Babar duly and enthusiastically applied. He was a good dog, but not a hugely accurate judge of character. "I remember you," he said to Babar, petting him. He looked up and saw me. "I remember you, too." "Hello, General," I said politely. The crowd was still milling around us, but quickly dispersing as folks raced to all corners of the colony to pass on what they were told. "You look taller," he said. "It's been a year," I said, "and I am a growing girl. This despite being kept in the dark all this time." The general seemed not to catch this. "Your mother said that you would be escorting me to see them. I'm a little surprised that they didn't come out themselves," he said. "They've had a busy couple of days," I said, "as have we all." "So colony life is more exciting than you thought it would be," the general said. "Something like that," I said, and then motioned. "I know my dad is very interested in talking to you, General. Let's not keep him waiting." I held my PDA in my hand. There was something not quite right about it. Gretchen noticed it too. "It feels weird," she said. "It's been so long since we carried one around. It's like I've forgotten how to do it."
"You seem to remember pretty well when we were using the ones in the information center," I said, reminding her of how we'd spent a fair amount of the last year.
"It's different," she said. "I didn't say I'd forgotten how to use one. I'm saying I've forgotten what it was like to carry one around. Two different things."
"You could always give it back," I said.
"I didn't say that," Gretchen said quickly. Then she smiled. "Still, you have to wonder.
In the last year, people here actually did manage to get along without them just fine. All the hootenannies and the plays and the other stuff. She looked at her PDA. Point is, even if people here aren't in a rush to turn us in, it's only a matter of time before the CU sends real enforcement to come get us. We can't ask the people here to get into any more trouble on our account. We have to go, Zoe. When? I asked. In the next day, Dad said. Gaw's ship is here now, but it's not like the CU is going to ignore it for long. So we're going to become citizens of the Conclave, I said. I don't think so, Dad said. We'll be among them for a while, yes, but I have a plan to get us somewhere I think you might be happy with. And where is that? I asked. Well, Dad said, have you ever heard of this little place called Earth? Dad and I spoke for a few more minutes, and then I walked over to Gretchen's, where I actually managed to say hello to her before I broke down in sobs. She gave me a hug and held me and let me know it was okay. I knew this was coming, she said to me. You don't do what you've done and then come back and pretend nothing has happened. I thought it might be worth a try, I said.
That's because you're an idiot, Gretchen said.
I laughed.
You're an idiot and my sister, and I love you, Zoe.
We hugged some more. And then she came over to my house and helped me and my family pack away our lives for a hasty exit. Word spread, as it would in a small colony. Friends came by, mine and my parents, by themselves and in twos and threes. We hugged and laughed and cried and said our goodbyes and tried to part well. As the sun started to set, Magdy came by, and he and Gretchen and I took a walk to the Gugino homestead, where I knelt and kissed Enzo's headstone and said goodbye to him one last time, even as I carried him still in my heart. We walked home, and Magdy said his goodbye then, giving me a hug so fierce that I thought it would crack my ribs. And then he did something he'd never done before. Gave me a kiss on my cheek. Goodbye, Zoe, he said. Goodbye, Magdy, I said. Take care of Gretchen for me. I'll try, Magdy said. But you know how she is. I smiled at that. Then he went to Gretchen, gave her a hug and a kiss, and left. And then it was Gretchen and me, packing and talking and cracking each other up through the rest of the night. Eventually, Mom and Dad went to sleep, but didn't seem to mind that Gretchen and I went on through the night and straight on until morning. A group of friends arrived in a Mennonite horse-drawn wagon to carry our things and us to the Conclave shuttle. We started the short journey laughing, but got quiet as we came closer to the shuttle. It wasn't a sad silence. It was a silence you have when you've said everything you need to say to another person. Our friends lifted what we were taking with us into the shuttle. There was a lot we were leaving behind, too bulky to take, that we had given to friends. One by one, all my friends gave me hugs and farewells and dropped away, and then there was just Gretchen and me again.
You want to come with me? I asked.
Gretchen laughed.
Someone has to take care of Magdy, she said, and Dad, and Roanoke.
You always were the organized one, I said.
And you were always you, Gretchen said.
Someone had to be, I said. And anyone else would have messed it up. Gretchen gave me another hug. Then she stood back from me.
No goodbyes, she said. You're in my heart, which means you're not gone.
All right, I said. No goodbyes. I love you, Gretchen.
I love you too, Gretchen said.
And then she turned and she walked away and didn't look back, although she did stop to give Babar a hug. He slobbered her thoroughly.